out! Oh, baby, what a play!
This is Jeff Fedotin with Believe in Chiefs on the Believe Network, Kansas City's number one sports podcast network, the only place with a show for every team in KC and more. We believe in our teams. Do you believe? On this week's show, former Kansas City Chiefs offensive lineman Joe Valerio and I discuss the latest Chris Jones and Kadarius Toney news. Joe, we'll start out. There's so much talk on Chris Jones, who has 1 year left on his deal, not being at training camp. Let me know if you think differently, and we'll go into this eventually. But I don't see this as a big deal in the sense that he's articulated how he wants to be a Chief for life. And for a guy who spent 5 years in the Spags of defense, I think he'll be fine if he misses time in camp. So I want to kind of think a look at this in a more interesting way, take it in a different direction, and rely on your experience in the trenches. Joe, what makes Chris Jones so special?
That's a great question, Jeff, and definitely worth talking about, because you know what? Let's put that aside. He's going to be playing. All right.
So you're also not worried? Like,
I'm not worried about it.
Yeah.
The Chiefs are going to find a way to get this done. Just number one, I know Brett Veach is looking at the depth chart going, yikes, we better get him in camp, right? I mean, just I'm just being honest. Nothing against the guys that are backing up Chris and what where the Chiefs depth chart is right now in the interior, but they got to sign him. Like, they're going to make it happen.
And that's not one of the position groups they have. Like, Nadi's a good player. Amenahu, I think, can slide in and play some D-tackle. But that's not one of the areas that they're particularly deep at. This might be one of the thinner areas on the roster.
Right. I mean, if they had a holdout, I mean, nothing against any of the guys that are starters on the offensive line. Trust me, that interior three that the Chiefs have is as good as any. But, you know, Nick Allegretti can play. And he can back up any position, and you're not going to lose games if Nick Allegretti's filling in for Joe Thuney. Mm-hmm. So anyway, roundabout way of saying why I think your question's a great one, because let's just put that aside. I think he's going to be starting in the games. You know, my prediction is he will start opening day, and they'll work it out. And So what if he misses camp? Jeff, we talked about this before. For a guy who's been playing this long and is that good, it might only help him staying out of camp.
Yeah,
you know, he might not get a tweak like Kadarius Toney. We're going to talk about that, you know, and just keep him out. Every good veteran knows how to hold out. It's not like he's going to be out of shape. He's one of the best defensive tackles in the game, if not one of the best defensive players in the game. So, put it aside, and let's talk about what makes him so good. His body, I mean, just look at him. He's got everything that you would look for in a new wave, new age, or whatever term you want to use, defensive tackle. You know, he's got the stoutness, the thickness to withstand double teams. He's got the length to pass rush and to get his hands up and block, you know, look to disrupt passing lanes for quarterbacks throwing across the middle. And he's got the stamina. He plays. He's got a motor, I should say, that he knows how to keep going and going and going. And like I said, to use that term, fighting off double teams and getting down blocked and doing all those things. He just has everything to be an unbelievable interior defensive lineman. Now, I think he reminds me a lot of Reggie White in his body type and his length and his shortness of his legs and the length of his arms. And I always thought that Reggie White, as great Hall of Fame, first ballot defensive end, I always thought Reggie White would have actually been better on the interior. He would have been, how you can bypass a first ballot Hall of Fame career. The guy did it all. I mean, I don't know if he could have had his, you know, how it's hard to say how you could have a greatest career as Reggie White had, but I think he would have been even better and more dominant on the inside.
And what a cut, Joe, beating me to the punch. I was going to ask you for a comp. Wow. Reggie, what, like Chris Jones, I thought, was the best interior player in football last year. Now, if I had one game to play, would I pick Aaron Donald over him? Yes, but Aaron Donald had a down year. He was hurt last year, and he's older. So that's why I'm kind of saying Jones over Donald. Donald's career, obviously, has been better. But to compare Reggie White, wow. That's I love the comp. And also that says, like, because Reggie White might have been the best defensive player, period, I saw.
Just reminds me so much of him, you know, in the way that he plays. He's, you know, because he's different than your typical defensive tackle that you may have seen 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years ago, right? Where the guys I remember going against at defensive tackle from my own personal experience were the Cortez Kennedys of the world. Mm-hmm. Dan Salamua, Russell Maryland. Bowling balls. We used to call them. Like Cortez Kennedy was a bowling ball. And I mean that in every compliment of the, in every way a compliment, right? He was a bowling ball. He was a fire hydrant, you know? And that was the typical defensive tackle back then. Jerome Brown is a name that, you know, might spark some memories for fans who are listening. But like, Chris he brings that Reggie White type of body type to John Randall was another guy who had a motor, you know, like he had a Porsche motor. I mean, the guy was, he never stopped and he never broke down, but he was not a guy that like Chris Jones could, you know, dominate a game from the outside and inside. And I think that's what makes Chris Jones special. I think it's his body type. I think it's some of the innate skills that he has and, his motor all combined into one that make him, you know, like you said, maybe you got one game to play and everybody's healthy. You go with Aaron Donald, maybe his experience and maybe that little intangible that he has. But I think Chris Jones for a full season is the guy that you want. And the reason why he should be up there getting paid like Aaron Donald.
Did you ever, I remember when that one of my favorite games that I've seen in person, that Chiefs-Eagles game, Joe, where the Chiefs just smoked the Eagles. Everyone thought we were going to run the ball, and we just aired it out. National TV again. Nationally televised game against that great defense. You played in that game. Did you have to block Reggie White at all, or was he just... God.
He was a handful, man. He threw me down on one play like I wasn't even – like I was a high school player. The guy was unbelievable. I mean, I was a 305-pound grown man, and it was like, get out of my way, kid.
Did he do the hump, that hump move that John did? Yeah. Did he do that on you?
Yeah, he threw the hump move on me, and then as he was picking me up off the ground, he put his hand out, and Reggie never called anybody by their name. He always called people by their number. And, I had met him when I was in college, when I was getting recruited by an agent, and there was a gentleman who was working Reggie White, his publicity. He was like his publicity agent, so to speak, or like everybody, you know, you had this, I didn't have one, but like a lot of the bigger players, they always had like they had their agent, right? Yeah. You got, think of the names, Lee Steinberg, Drew Rosenhaus, right? You got these big time agents that are doing your contract. And then a lot of times in your local city, you might have a local agent that does your local stuff. Mm-hmm. And then you've got your agent that might do, or some publicity person that might do within an agency that might do your national stuff, you know, your national commercials and spokesperson stuff and whatnot. So I was with this agent who was working Reggie's local PR. And when I was getting recruited out of college, and he was kind of recruiting me to maybe be his contract agent. So he said, "Hey, Joe, would you like to come meet Reggie White at his radio show at a local sports bar in the Philadelphia area?" So I got to meet Reggie then when I was a college senior, right after my senior year, getting ready for the draft and combine and all that stuff and getting recruited by this agent. So it was a real thrill to meet him. And so I knew him, and I wouldn't have expected Reggie to remember that, you know, or whatever, but so when after Reggie threw me on the ground like I was a rag doll, he puts his hand out and he says, "Hey, 73, do you know Jesus?" Right? Because hey, that's what Reggie did. He was the minister of defense, right? He was always preaching. And I looked at him and I said, "Reggie, I got to be honest with you. After that move you put on me, I saw Jesus." So he got a kick out of it. Left everybody alone for the rest of the game, and you know, we won that game. So that was a big game. And you know, so anyway, that was
what a great story, Joe. That's one of the best Jovi stories we've had on this pod.
Oh well, appreciate that one. I love telling that one because it was a thrill, right, to play against Reggie White. And you know, but here's can I tell you another Reggie White story to go along?
Love it. Yeah, yeah. So if it's anything like that.
Our listeners are going to like this, right? So my roommate in college, was our center, and we were roommates for 3 years in college. you know, freshman year, we, you know, you get a random roommate, but then we became, you know, best of friends. And I said to the agent, I said, hey, if I come to this Reggie White thing, would you mind if I brought my roommate? He's another, he's a center on our team. And the guy was like, yeah, no problem. It's a big deal, right? It's going to cost the, you know, cost the agent a hamburger at, you know, at a local sports bar. Well, you know, Reggie was very, you know, he did not promote alcohol. You know, Reggie was very strict about that. And like when we would, when he used to do his radio show from the sports bar, he always made sure that the beer signs were covered up and everything. So look, I was a typical college kid, right? And I'm not saying that I was like a party animal, but you know, I knew how to have a good time, go out and have a beer with my buddies and, you know, celebrate a win or whatever. So we had a fun night. Let's just put it that way. The night before we went to meet with Reggie White. And so we're at the radio show at the sports bar and they sit us down at the table and Reggie White's wife is there. And Reggie comes over and kisses his wife and says hello. And she introduces us and she says, hey, this is Joe and Pat. And Joe is talking to, you know, your PR agent, Glenn, and he's, you know, kind of like trying to, you know, make it in the NFL, right? At this point, I just finished my senior year and whatnot, and it was still the NFL season was still going on. And Reggie said, oh, it's great. Good luck to you. And, you know, if you pick Glenn as your agent, you'll love working with him, blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, thanks, Reggie. He goes, I'm going to go do the show. Nice to meet you. Good luck with everything. And hopefully I'll see you in the NFL someday. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, awesome, Reggie. Great. What an honor to meet you, right? So we sit down and I'm relatively emotionally intelligent, Jeff, but my roommate wasn't. And so, you know, Glenn says, hey, what do you guys want for dinner? You know, while the show was going on, it was a typical call-in show, you know? Mm-hmm. And I said, well, I'll have a Diet Coke and I'd love to get a hamburger. Right. So I'm reading the room, man. I know the deal. So my roommate goes, you know what? I'll grab give me a Miller Lite and I'll take a burger too. So I looked at him. I said, what are you doing? I said, we're sitting with Mrs. White here. She just got done telling everybody how to cover up all the beer signs. What are you doing? Right? And he said, well, I just want a beer with a burger. I'm like, dude, we're still hungover from last night. We're with the Minister of Defense wife, and you're ordering a beer? Are you an idiot? Right? So, oh, Jeff, she went on a tirade, right? She goes,
Mrs. White, you're saying went on a tirade.
She goes, yeah. Patrick, what are you doing drinking alcohol? And I'm playing along. I'm like, Mrs. White, I don't know what he's doing. She's like, you don't drink, do you, Joe? I said, no way, Mrs. White. I don't touch alcohol. You know, and I'm like, lying, of course, right? Because I'm still hungover. I'm lying to Reggie White's wife. And she's going, Patrick, don't you know what alcohol does to your body? And do you think Reggie White could perform at the level that he does if he partook, I don't know whatever word she used, of alcohol and alcoholic beverages while he's in season? And I'm like, that's right, Mrs. White, you tell him. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, she gave him the third degree, Jeff. And I was laughing the whole time because I kind of just fibbed and said, Mrs. White, I would never touch alcohol. No way. And I follow my life like Reggie White. So
that is hilarious.
It was really funny. It was really
funny.
And
I also appreciate I think you kind of hung your teammate out to dry there, but so far, Believe in Chiefs, you've always had my back. I'm glad that in the years passing, you're much more supportive.
If we were having dinner with Reggie White's wife tonight, I would totally tell her you were a teetotaler and that you never had a drop of alcohol in your life.
Appreciate it, Joe. Appreciate it. Well, more on Reggie White's wife. Maybe not, or maybe we'll shift to other things. But first, Bet Online is your number one source for all your betting needs. Get the latest odds, lines, and matchup reports for baseball, boxing, golf, and more. Bet Online continues to be the fastest and easiest way to place your wagers, including live betting and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your phone. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today and get in on the action. Remember to use promo code BLEAV, B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Joe, I barely made it through that. I was trying so hard not to laugh about that story. I don't know if you could tell, I was really straining on that ad, trying not to. But to more serious issues, because unfortunately between the Jones holdout. And now the Kadarius Toney news. It's been kind of a little bit of a grim start to Chiefs training camp. The latest update with Kadarius Toney is that the wide receiver had surgery on his torn meniscus Tuesday morning. Joe, what's your level of concern?
Well, I mean, you know, a meniscus tear, if it's slight, they can grind that thing down, smooth it out. And, you know, it's not like they went in to repair an ACL or,
right,
it's not like he's doing a total knee replacement or anything. I mean, I think he should be fine. But, you know, it's just that extra little ding, you know, that Kadarius didn't need, you know, to his body based on his history, right? I mean, that's been his knock, right? He's as talented as Tariq Hill. We know that. We know we've seen sparks of it and we've seen signs of it. But, you know, you got to stay healthy, right? I mean, I was joking around with Steven and Nate this morning on 810 chatting about, you know, when I got to Penn, right, our trainer said, Valerio, you got to be four things if you want to play football here at Penn. You got to be hostile, you got to be agile, and you got to be mobile. But most of all, you have to be eligible. So, right, like, which basically was saying you got to be out on the field, like whether it's taking care of the things in the classroom, you know, so that you have a good GPA to get out on the field, you know, you're not under academic probation, or whether it's getting into the trainer and getting healthy, you have to be eligible to play, right? You got to be out there. And it's just like that one thing that we don't need right now, the distraction of dealing with, you know, what this offense could have looked like with Kadarius if he's there, you know, would have been there from the outset. Now, that's not to say that he's not going to be ready by game 2, 3, 4, whatever, when the heart of the season starts. So let's not panic yet, right? The same way we're not panicking with the Chris Jones holdout. Let's not panic with Kadarius's injury. You know, he got a meniscal, you know, tear smoothed out probably, right? I'm not Kadarius Toney, and they clock me on a calendar when I run the 40-yard dash. So, but I've been dealing with a meniscus tear since my daughters were 8 years old. It's a little embarrassing, but my daughter's soccer coach, we were at soccer practice when my daughters were 8 years old, and the coach was like, hey, Joe, would you mind, you know, doing some agility drills with the kids? So I used to do their agility work. Like, I don't know anything about soccer. Yeah. I do now that I follow the, you know, Premier League. But like, I didn't know anything about soccer back then, but he said, hey, would you do some agility stuff? And so I was teaching the kids agility drills, and I would do cone drills and things that I had learned, you know, operating in small and large spaces and offensive linemen. So I had some really good drills that we used to do with the kids to work on their footwork. And I had done it for several weeks and, you know, to no issue. And then one day I was out there and pow, I tweaked my knee. And, you know, there's nothing more embarrassing than going down in front of, you know, 15, 8-year-olds. Very, very embarrassing.
Especially when you're a former, like, professional athlete, you know.
Right. And, you know, you're wincing, you're rolling around, and you're like, oh, boy. So, you know, I got my MRI. I got it looked at. I went to an orthopedist, and, you know, one orthopedist said, get surgery. I went to our team doctor from Penn when I was at a Penn football game. And he said, you know, Joe, he goes, how long has it been since it happened? I said, well, it's been about 3 or 4 weeks. He goes, can you jog? Can you run? I said, actually, yeah, I can. It doesn't really hurt anymore for me to jog or run or do the things I like to do. He goes, how about golf? Do you play golf? I said, yeah, I can play golf. He said, well, then why would you get surgery? Right. Oh. So anyway, I'm not saying that I'm Kadarius Toney, but I don't think a meniscal tear is as serious as, you know, anything else. And hopefully they smoothed it out and they rehab them. They get them back, you know, the scope wounds heal and bam. And he's as good as new come, you know, week 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, even as let's get him to the bye week, right? Whatever.
Right.
You know, I think it's going to be fine.
Yeah. I don't think it's so much a concern for this year. It's literally the first day at camp. So the,
is if you're going to have an injury, if you're going to have a surgery, you want it now. You know, the Chiefs are going to be playing late in the season. We know that. So you'd rather have it now, and then he's available for the more important games, the regular season games and, you know, the postseason games. I, too, Joe, have had some knee injury. I've had both ACLs and had some scope done, and it's obviously you can come back pretty quick. I'm doing some more research on this because I'm going to Check it out, listeners. I'm going to be writing a story on Forbes like this and try and talk to a doctor. So, but my concern with this is, like you said, that one, this is what we know about Tony, is that he's so talented. He's so elusive after the catch, but this is his bugaboo. It seems like he always gets nicked up. I'm also trying to find out, he had arthroscopic surgery before, he had it last year when he was with the Giants.
He had arthroscopic surgery on his knee last year. I'm trying to find out whether it's the same leg. Then you start to worry, if it's the same leg and it's, you know, you worry that's a lot of wear and tear, and each time you're not quite the same. And again, I'm not saying necessarily for this year, but you worry about a guy who hasn't been in the league very long. Maybe he won't have as long a career as you would have expected for a guy this talented.
Yeah, no, that's. I mean, I'm not trying to jinx him or anything, but yeah, I mean, it's just a sign of more things to come. If it's a cumulative effect, right? Injuries are cumulative, and you hope he can just eke out, 8-10 years, and then maybe he retires and goes off into sunset. I mean, that's the way I probably. Again, I'm not wishing anything on him. I'm just trying to make a prediction based on where he's at. I mean, that's probably what the NFL is going to get out of Kadarius Toney. You know, is probably a 7 to 8, 10 year career, and he's not going to be Jerry Rice, who plays for X amount of years and sets records, like crazy records for longevity and numbers of receptions and touchdowns, right? It's just the way his body is and the way it's going to go, and I think that's just something, a reality we're going to have to live with. So, we're just going to take every piece of magic that Kadarius Toney can give us on this roster. Now, today, tomorrow, and next year, and maybe we don't even look past that, right? And hopefully the Chiefs start to really plan for that.
If I'm the Chiefs, yeah, I take as long as I can. I mean, no rush at all. This is happening so early. If you have to wait halfway through the season, which I don't think it will, I'm saying this just on a total ballpark estimate, but I take as long as I want, because the key is having him in the crunch time. Joe, right. I thought he was kind of the MVP of the Super Bowl. That's who his punt return, which is the longest in Super Bowl history. And then he also had that great touchdown, which they then replicated the same play to Sky Moore. I thought that changed the game. I thought after that, the Chiefs had momentum totally shifted after that punt return, and the Chiefs didn't kind of look back. So, I mean, his value is really, when he's there, he is, he's a tough guy to bring down.
It's a playmaker. I mean, he shows up, big plays, big games, and that's what you want. So let's just go with that, right? For right now, not panic. It's not push the panic button, pull the plug yet. Let's just kind of figure out where he's going to be and what it's going to look like and how the depth that they've built around that position this year comes to fruition, right? I mean, like we got some depth there. I think we've got enough players that can, that can make plays and fit into this offense. Let's not forget, Sky Moore he's got a year ahead of him now to really grow and to see where he ends up. You got MVS, right? Had a good year. We've got some players that, Rashee Rice, we got Justin Watson, Richie James, Cornell Powell. We were high on Cornell Powell his rookie year. There's going to be some talent in there that's going to come to fruition. And, you hope that it comes sooner rather than later. So I think there's definitely some hidden gems in there that we may surprise us if Kadarius isn't able to, to make it back, super early in the season, and that'll get us through, get us to that bye week, so to speak.
Totally. And for those young guys, whether it's Rice or Justin Ross, John Ross is not so young, but these guys have to take advantage of these opportunities, and we'll see if they can. It'll be interesting for a wide receivers room group that has a lot of depth in the sense that, there might not be the Tyreek Hill level stars, but there's a lot of, we don't know who of this group will make the roster. Cause I think there's a lot of good people, a lot of guys with intriguing potential. that needs to be sorted out. So this is, these guys have to use it for this opportunity. Joey, the last thing I want to talk about, Friday. Friday mean is first day in pads. Any, what does that mean to you? Any memories that come up of first pads day?
Oklahoma drill. That's one term that comes up every time I think about the first day of camp when the pads were on. Oklahoma drill. You know, one-on-one, O-line versus D-line and linebackers, running backs versus linebackers, wide receivers versus D-backs, one-on-one, you against a defender as an offensive player, right? Offensive versus defensive player at their associated positions with a running back behind you in a shoot. And it was time to see where your heart was and where your head was. And it was a wake up. And it was something I've done, you know, had been doing since I was a little kid. Oklahoma drill was always sort of a rite of passage or an initiation into the first day of pads. Is it the best drill to be doing? I mean, the only thing I give Oklahoma drill credit for is that it's, at least it's applicable. It's not bull in the ring, which I think is absolutely the most silliest drill in the history of the universe when it comes to football. I don't know if you're familiar with it, Jeff, or if there's other listeners that are. I used to, when I was coaching high school football.
Sorry to interrupt, Joe. That's how Christian Okoye got hurt. That, you know, he always had that big neck roll that made his pads, he looked even more massive. That's because he got like a bull in the ring drill. Like, I don't know, this is late 80s, that, and it bothered him throughout his career and after, because he.
Yeah. When I used to coach high school football, we used to go down and work with the youth club. I would always say, you know, I would reel the coaches in and say, hey, how many of you, you know, do a bull in the ring? And I'd wait for them to raise their hand. And like, I kind of made it sound like, you know, it was something because I was an ex NFL player, like, ooh, bull in the ring, they should be doing that. And they'd go, yeah. And I'd say, nah, stop it. Mm-hmm. Don't do that. It's not, no, when on the field are you ever in a ring of people chopping your feet and then somebody calls out a number and the whole goal is to lambaste you? Like, nobody, that doesn't happen on the football field.
Yeah, Joe, describe for the listeners out there, and I know bull in the ring has certainly been phased out. I believe Oklahoma drills have been kind of phased out as well.
They have. Describe
to listeners what those drills entail.
So bull in the ring was a drill where you literally lined your team up in a circle. Like, could be like a 20-yard, you know, diameter radius circle. And a player's in the middle and he's just chopping his feet, looking around. And then with no purpose other than to get hit. So then all of a sudden he'd be chopping. And then all of a sudden the coach would yell out a number of one of the players in the circle around the ring. Okay. Like, picture somebody somewhere between 5 to 10 yards away in a circle around a player who's in the middle. And they would yell 37. And then number 37 would have to run, and he'd have to find number 37, first of all. Like, you'd have your head on a swivel, chopping your feet, looking around. And as soon as they yelled a number, you had to find that guy. And then that guy's sole job was to run into you as hard as he possibly could. Like, no ball, no blocking, just run into you as hard as – like, it was – oh, I cringe when I think about it. Because that never happens on a field ever.
Right.
But Oklahoma drill actually – now, they sort of not banned it, but you don't see it as much. But Oklahoma drill is actually a drill that if I were coaching, I would still do Oklahoma drill. Like, I think Oklahoma drill, maybe not in the NFL, those guys don't need to do it, but like in high school or college, Oklahoma drill is, so you line up in an offensive player versus a defensive player. Usually it was O-line versus D-down linemen versus and linebackers. And the linebackers would be like 4 yards off the ball, right? And you would be staring at that player. You'd have a quarterback off to the side, and you'd have a shoot, which when I say a shoot, you'd have two blocking dummies. Maybe, you know, they'd be like 7 or 8 yards apart. Okay, so you're in the middle between – so the running back has to run between those pads or cones. You could use cones. And you had to block the guy in front of you, and the other player you were blocking on defense had to shed you and try to tackle the running back. I mean, that happens on a football field. And so, you know, Oklahoma drill isn't – it's applicable. And for D-backs and wide receivers, you'd have like a guy in like, you know – like, you know, a bump and run position, right? Like a cornerback versus a wide receiver. And you'd have to go block, you know, face up, block the guy. And then the running back would either go to the left or the right and come through that chute. So it was actually a very applicable drill from a one-on-one blocking perspective. Now, you know, I guess people have outlawed it because, you know, it's singled up, right? It's one-on-one. And, you know, I mean, to this day, you know, I always thought it was a very applicable drill. Maybe not the first day of hitting. That's the only thing. Like a lot of times it was right out of the gate. Like you go through a practice and then you'd end the practice with Oklahoma drill. And some teams do it like 2-on-2 where you'd have two down linemen versus two D linemen. Hey, that happens on a football field where a running back is coming behind and two guys have to block those guys. And then, you know, they try to tackle the running back. So it's an absolute applicable drill, but you could also see why teams would kind of ban it or outlaw it or limit what you did with that drill. Cause you know, you don't want to do it like the first day of practice maybe because, you know, you're just getting used to hitting and getting the pads on. So you might want to save your hitting for actual full team scrimmage where it's more, even more appropriate that your whole team is going, right? Things simulating what your whole team is going to do.
Joe, with full pads coming on Friday, you know, I know that makes it harder, you know, for everything. But do you think the current guys, any part of the current guys, kind of look forward to when the pads do come on? I know it's harder. That's kind of when football has become football.
Especially on the O-line and D-line because, you know, you can't do 7-on-7 as an O-line D-lineman, right? You can't. It's not like wide receivers who can run patterns and do what we used to call skeleton or skelly or 7-on-7 where you're just basically playing, for lack of better terms, Jeff, you're playing touch football, right? Like you can't simulate a whole lot without pads on. Like even we used to do some minor like pass rush stuff, but you don't have your – you know, you can't get your helmet and hands in there and you don't feel what it's like to grab underneath, you know, a defensive lineman's shoulder pads and get in there and grab, you know, or the D linemen can't feel what it's like to try to grab an offensive lineman's pads and swim over them or do a rip move or whatever. Like it just, and run blocking, forget it. Like you can't simulate run blocking without pads. It's, you know, or your helmet and all that stuff. So yeah, Jeff, for most players, other than defensive backs and wide receivers and running backs who are running patterns, like it's when football starts is when the pads come on. So yeah, if you're going to play a season, you might as well put the pads on because you got to get ready for opening day. So yeah, we always look forward to getting the pads on. Number one, it meant we were one day closer to camp being over. So that was always, you had to get through it. So you might as well put the damn pads on. So
great stuff there, Joe. Well, if you enjoy this show presented by Bet Online, please subscribe. We're available on your favorite directories, iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Luminary, and TuneIn. Thanks for listening, and we'll be back next week.
Go Chiefs!